Hey everyone, this is Adam Ellenboss from Nightlight Astrology. Today we're going to take a look at Venus's conjunction with Neptune in the late degrees of Pisces. We're going to take a look at this from the standpoint of the major archetypal themes and significations that you may notice, but more specifically, we're going to look at five unique healing thoughts or ideas that Venus-Neptune's conjunction may present us with, or that we might meditate on right now. So kind of a way of getting into this archetypal combination that I think is really useful. From time to time, it's always good to look at the planetary combinations and just get a feel for what the general blending of archetypes looks like in a conjunction like this. And then it's also good to sort of think about how our thoughts and ideas and how our worldview or our experiences are reflected by an archetypal combination, or how they might be changed by an archetypal combination, because ideas and thought forms are themselves archetypal. And so one of the great things about transits is that they can reflect the ways in which we think and the different options that we have in how we think about things, which sometimes we forget. Oh, I have options in terms of the outlooks that I have and the ways that I think about life. So anyway, I think this will be fun. So that's what we're going to do for today. Before we get into it, as always, don't forget to like and subscribe. Share your comments and reflections, especially if you were born with Venus-Neptune in a conjunction or some kind of aspect in your chart. You are a card-carrying member of the Venus-Neptune Society, so tell us what you think about it. You can find transcripts of any of my daily talks on the website, which is nightlightastrology.com. Now, I am in the midst of promoting a couple of things right now. So our promotions for the day are going to be... go over to nightlightastrology.com and show you our live events page. This month, the live talk of the month is Uranus in Love. So you can click on that talk to register. It is April 18th. It's $20. We're going to be talking about Uranus and the significations of Uranus in love, sex, and relationships. That's happening right before Jupiter and Uranus can join in Venus's sign. So it's a good time to talk about the significations of Uranus, whether in natal chart or by transit, when it shows up in relation to love, sex, sexuality, intimacy. What does Uranus have to teach us? How do we work with that planet when it comes to our most intimate and personal relationships? You can also pick up copies of Neptune in Love or Pluto in Love, which I did in February and March. And then the other thing to point you to is enrollment is now open for our first year course, Ancient Astrology for the Modern Mystic, which begins on June 16th. And you can read more about the course and everything it includes on the page at the bottom. You'll find registration options, including early bird payment and tuition plans, and then need-based tuition assistance. If you're someone who needs a little help to make it possible to take the course, please feel free to apply for need-based tuition. We're taking applications for that now and enrollment's wide open. So we hope to see some of you there. The other thing that I am currently promoting is Ashley's Herbal Apprenticeship Program, which begins at the end of this month of April. You can learn more about that program at skyhouseherbs.com. I will take you over there right now briefly. You can go to skyhouseherbs.com and click on the courses page, and you'll find the Herbal Foundations Apprenticeship. This is a one-year course in plant spirit medicine and herbalism. You'll find at the bottom that there are payment plans, early bird pricing, and need-based tuition, as we have for all of our programs, also available for the Herbal Apprenticeship course. At the end of today's program, afterward, if you stick around, there's an interview I've been tagging on to the end of all of my videos for some weeks now. And that video is an interview with Ashley about her program. You can also learn more about her and her work at her YouTube channel, Skyhouse Herbs. Okay, so let us take a look now at the Venus-Neptune conjunction. We're going to consider sort of five radical healing ideas, ways that we may shift our thoughts. So here is the conjunction. This is coming through April 3rd, Wednesday. You can feel this when it's about 3 degrees away, which means you could start feeling it about March 31st. And then we give it about 3 more degrees. It changes signs by Friday, April 5th. So especially you'll feel it though Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday of this week, 2nd, 3rd, 4th of April, right around there. So the major themes of Neptune, Venus is exalted in Pisces. So it's a very watery and feminine place for Venus. This is Jupiter's feminine domicile. And you will often find a very uplifting and sort of philosophical, mystical, romantic, and imaginative Venus in this sign, which is why people love Venus in Pisces. For those reasons, Venus in Pisces is compassionate, sensitive, romantic, imaginative, artistic, sensual, erotic, just a very elevated and kind of otherworldly Venus. Now, when she gets together with Neptune in that sign, of course, now you're just amplifying a lot of the same themes. Neptune is subtle. Oh my God, Nuttle. Okay, so Neptune is subtle and timeless. Neptune points to the need for unity or oneness. And Neptune is a planet of great healing and compassion, forgiveness, surrender, but also intoxication, escapism, overwhelm, exhaustion, dissolution, disillusionment, and as well as things like illusion and deception. So when Venus and Neptune get together, we have all of the, super amplified spiritual, mystical, sensual, and exotic qualities. It is like an otherworldly mystical spa. I think you guys have heard me describe Venus Neptune that way before. And, dipping your toes in the waters of Venus Neptune can be very healing, whether you take an evening to paint or journal or make love with your lover. This is a combination that can be, it's about immersing yourself in this healing, sensual, the healing and sensual waters of Venus Neptune. So that is, and that can play out in so many different ways, depending on house location in your chart. Maybe it's showing up in your career. Maybe it's showing up, that healing energy is showing up around home and family. But the subtle and timeless dimensions of Venus and Neptune can really connect us with this this feeling that we're connected to a beauty that transcends time and space. You think about the kind of Shakespearean quality of completely losing yourself, like a Romeo and Juliet, let's just say without the tragedy. There can be some like tragic dimensions to Venus and Neptune, don't get me wrong, but yeah. So anyway, so Venus and Neptune is, something we should watch for in our experience right now. I mean, on the sort of dark or shadow side, watch for illusions, delusions, lack of groundedness, seeing through rose-colored glasses, the tendency to get lost in fantasy. We made the distinction between imagination and fantasy, that imagination is fantasy that does not live in an ivory tower, that has to live itself out in the world, that has to participate in the world, and has to move from this kind of reflective state of idealization into living states where the imagined becomes lived, and you can't constantly be in a dissociated romantic state of reflection. You have to be in the actual romance of living a life. And there's a back and forth between, kind of imaginative reflection and engaged participation. So that's Venus Neptune. Venus Neptune amplifies that dynamic and the tendency to split within that dynamic. But today, aside from reminding ourselves about Venus Neptune significations, there are five healing ideas that come from the heart of Venus Neptune that I think we ought to consider, because archetypes are also reflective of the way we think. And Venus Neptune will bring up some very specific themes and ways in which we tend to think about those themes. So that's what I want to explore next. All right. So five healing ideas, or five ways in which we might think about or with or through the Venus-Neptune dynamic that could be healing for us. And number one on that list is that you don't have to be healed or whole to be loved. Venus-Neptune moves into love with a degree of surrender, compassion, forgiveness, faith, especially in the sign of Pisces, a Jupiter-ruled sign, that can be really refreshing. Now, I don't mean to pick on any, ideas are just ideas. They almost always have times and places in which they're appropriate and, you know, circumstances in which they may not be appropriate. We tend to be so black and white about the ideas we embrace because, you know, they help us through a period of time in our life. They're necessary. They are the idea of the moment. And yet we end up making them into dogmas. They become inflexible and rigid. So one of the ideas that we carry around is that the more whole and complete I am, the more individualized I am spiritually, the more lovable that I am. And okay, right? We can relate to that we become a better version of ourselves. We do some healing work, and it on that level, we become more attractive to other people. We become more whole. We become more attractive. The more whole and sort of luminous we are, the more lovable we are. There's something that's we can all relate to about these ideas. However, the counter idea, or the sort of, let's just like push in the opposite direction. Venus Neptune is also a transit that can say something to us like, I love you whether you are heal or whole or individualized or not. And we're meant to be loved along the way, at every step of the way, for who we are and where we are spiritually, psychologically, you know, regardless of what we've realized or where we've arrived. And that is such a relief and such a release that we don't need to keep pushing ourselves to think, well, I'm going to be left or I'm not lovable until I've reached some state of having been healed. No. There's something like Kuan Yin, Bodhisattva, Christ-like about this transit that says, you are meant to be loved regardless of how healed you are. And in fact, being loved is a part of how we heal, because there's a grace and a mercy and a compassion and a sense of seeing the best in us that love, being loved, provides us with, that itself is healing. There's this myth that we have to do all the healing work on our own, within ourselves. It's just me and my healing work. I have to be the source of my own self-love. And yeah, all of that is true. All of those ideas sort of serve a purpose, right? You can identify those ideas in your own life. Like, there's been times when I've needed those ideas. But the opposite idea is that that being loved is actually an incredibly important part of how we heal. It's not that we heal ourselves and then we're able to be loved. Number two, you don't have to be perfectly boundaried to be loved. Venus Neptune works in the dissolution of boundaries. You know, quite regularly, that's a Neptunian signification. But Venus Neptune in Pisces in particular, it says something like, look, it's okay if you tend to be someone who identifies in and through relationships more than individuality and independence. I remember I read recently, because it was like all the rage, you know, Ashley and I read a book, and I'm going to forget what it was called, but it's about attachment theory and all the different styles of attachment that people have, secure, anxious, avoidant, all of these things. It was interesting. It was certainly interesting. And I would say, you know, earlier in my life, I certainly could identify with some of those styles in relationships that I had been in, you know, in my early 20s. I'd like to think that Ashley and I are pretty secure at this point. We've had a long time to develop and grow too, you know, and there's times where you slide in and out of those attachment styles when things are stressful, I think. But one of the myths that exists out there that Venus Neptune just loves to defy is the myth that in order to be mature in love and relationships, you ought to be quite independent and individual. That's just not true. There are so many of us who relate with being more independent and self-contained and sort of self-sufficient. And that's beautiful. There's nothing wrong with that. There's also absolutely nothing wrong with people who identify more with relationships, with being in love, with being connected, with being affectionate, with holding hands, with talking, with being in friendship groups or having friends. Pair bonding is an absolutely normal state of existence and experience. The universe is a relational matrix of being that is just, you know, peopled with beings. So there's this myth out there that you can't be loved or you can't be in love until you've really cultivated this strong sense that I don't need anyone. I don't need anything. I'm not a relational being. I'm an independent being. Venus Neptune says, no, that's not true. There are some people are just going to naturally gravitate toward relationships. Could be pets, people, kids, friends, lovers. And you do not have to cultivate or develop some hyper strong sense of individuality to be worthy of or to be in healthy relationships. You know, some people are just more relational than others. And of course, all the ideas about developing a strong sense of individuality have their place as well, especially when things become problematic because we're codependent or our attachment becomes problematic. We can't stand on our own and it's debilitating in some way. Okay, then the ideas have a place. But you see, when they get so dogmatic, we forget that the other idea has a truth. And most ideas exist in dualities that ancient astrologers thought of as themselves archetypal. So ideas, one idea, another idea, they exist in archetypal dyads. Number three, you don't have to be good on your own to be loved. There's this thing I remember, you know, in my 20s, there's just a lot of rhetoric around people my age in their 20s at the time who were like, I'm just working on being okay, being alone. It's sort of similar to what we're saying in some of the other ideas we've presented so far, but it's this notion that until you've learned to live on your own for like maybe half a decade and you've lived on your own, you've dated but not committed, you've not lived with anyone, you're sort of living your own life. At that point, then you'll be qualified. So all these ideas are similar. Do you see what I mean? Neptune, Venus says, no, you don't have to be good on your own. In fact, if it hurts when you're on your own, if you deal with loneliness and romantic longing because you're on your own, that is actually normal and healthy because we are meant to love and live in harmony with each other, in deep bonded connection with each other. So Venus, Neptune, this is Venus, Neptune's like slogan. Are there shadows with Venus, Neptune that have to do with attachment or connection or lack of boundaries or lack of personal healing, seeking salvation in other people? And yeah, of course there are. But we always lean in that direction because we've all drunk the Kool-Aid of individuality and sovereignty and personal power and so forth. So it's fun to push back in the opposite direction with archetypes sometimes. Number four is that you don't have to repeat the past. Venus Neptune is so deeply healing. And sometimes we find Venus Neptune transits bringing us connection and healing. And then we go, ooh, should I trust this? Because in the past, it's always gone like this. And a radical Venus Neptune idea is that, no, this healing, this beauty, this depth of connection that you're experiencing is because you've grown. It's because you don't have to repeat the past. And this is not a trap, you know? Number five, you don't have to apologize for being romantic. This world absolutely loves to make us feel like, being boundaried, being individual, being strong, being capable, being rational, being objective, having a healthy sense of detachment from things. All of this means personal strength, and that means you're lovable. Yeah, but you know, the other truth is that there are dreamers and romantics and artists and, you know, people who walk through the world hearing music, and it's okay to be that way. You don't have to apologize for being romantic. It doesn't mean that you lack grounding. As long as you're not living, in some completely dissociated state where you're unable to live a life, you know, being a romantic is a beautiful quality, not a problematic one. Desiring contact, desiring touch, desiring connection, living in the realm of ideas and art, and wanting to bring those dimensions of life into your relationships and your job. And there's nothing wrong with any of those things. The world is not always hospitable to those things, so that doesn't mean there's something wrong with them. So don't apologize for being a romantic. Venus Neptune says, being a romantic is one of the natural states of existence, just like it is to naturally desire love and connection, to desire dissolution and melting into others, as opposed to being so well boundary 24/7. You don't have to be good and perfectly individualized to be loved. You don't have to be healed to be loved. Love, in some ways, is the answer. You know, a lot of the times it's not, do all of this personalized, individualized work, self-love, we call it. Just be self-loving. And then it's good. It's good to be self-loving, right? I mean, you're all probably going like, yeah, like I've had to do some work to really take care of myself and to, you know, have a relationship with myself. And that's important. There's nothing wrong with that. The other truth is that, you know, we really starve without romance, love, and connection. And there's no, like, self-love is great, but, you know, other people, other beings are, for most of us, necessary as well. So anyway, just a gentle pushing back in the opposite direction that you'll often hear these ideas about love that come up around Venus, Neptune, but they often, because of the moment that we're in, you know, we're all sort of developing our individual avatars and so forth, and we're developing our sovereignty and our power and our personal self-love and all this stuff. And it's good to push back in the opposite direction sometimes. And Venus Neptune is a good transit to do so for these particular ideas. So I hope it was useful to experiment with this today. And you can, as always, you can leave a story. If you have one, use the hashtag grabbed, or email us your story, grabbed at nightlightastrology.com. If you have a Venus Neptune story to share this week, stick around after I sign off. You'll hear an interview that I did with Ashley about her upcoming herbal apprenticeship program. And don't forget, Uranus in Love is coming up on April 18th. Would hope to, let's see, let me just put it. So you can find that at nightlightastrology.com. And I hope to see you guys there. All right. Take it easy, everyone. Bye. Hey, everyone. Thanks so much for sticking around. I'm really happy to be joined by my wife, Ashley, who is an herbalist. Hi, Ashley.
Hey.
And yeah, I'm really excited to be helping Ashley promote her upcoming program, which is something that you actually began teaching many years ago, this herbal apprenticeship program. I think it was, what, 2011 or 12 that it got started, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So it's been over 10 years I've been offering this course. And yeah, it's my favorite thing to teach.
Yeah. And just to be clear, because some people on my channel, most people know you because you pop on here or there. We talk about herbs and astrology. There's an attraction in our marriage and an attraction in the subject matter that is old. Like, we've been together for, you know, 14 years in our relationship going on. And we've always had a fascination with each other's areas of expertise. And we've done lots of things to marry them together over the years, in addition to literally getting married. And and actually, herbalists and astrologers have married the subjects of herbs and planets together for thousands of years as well. Now, your program is focused on, you know, herbalism. It's not an astrology course, but there is certainly a lot of overlap in terms of the energetics and the spiritual approach to herbalism that you take. And so I was hoping that we could start off just by telling people a little bit about the program. You're coming to this after taking a little bit of time on maternity leave. Our kids were not yet in school. Now they are. You're coming back to work. This is really exciting. The new program launches at the end of April. I'm going to put it up on the screen so people can see it. You can find it at skyhouseherbs.com. Enrollment is open now. The course begins. You go under Courses, Herbal Foundations Apprenticeship at the end of April. Tell us about it.
Well, this course, I guess my goal in redesigning the apprenticeship course that I've been teaching for 10 years is to make it even more personal and to allow people to study the material, digest it at their own pace. So what it's going to be is a combination of kind of three main parts. The first one is the recorded material. So there's going to be modules that will be released and people can listen to them as they, you know, as they have time. The second part are live classes where we will meet live on Zoom and talk about the module, I'll answer questions, I'll give even more information about it. And then the third part is the sacred plant pairings. And so I've always taught the herbal portion, like the plant diets, one at a time, but this year I'm going to do it in pairs because I think you can learn a lot by comparing and contrasting herbs. So for every module, you'll have two herbs to study and you'll get a little cheat sheet about them before you start the module. And then you'll have an opportunity to work with those two plants and blend them and keep them separate and just really work with them closely. Because my goal is that I want people to be able to find information that they can really use in their own lives, maybe with clients, whether they have a professional herbal practice or maybe they're a therapist in a different field, that they'll know these plants so that they can work with them really comfortably.
I love the different modules that you have, just so we can preview them for people. Module one is Vitalism and the Heart of Herbalism. Module two, Building Your Home Apothecary. They're so diverse. I love module three is my favorite, Plant Spirit Medicine, Energetics and Chemistry. You have such a holistic approach. It's what I've always loved about your teaching. You'll teach about the doctrine of signatures. You'll talk to people about how to communicate with plants, how to think of them as teachers that are living beings, that have personalities, that aren't just, you know, phytochemistry or whatever, but you will also teach phytochemistry. And I think that you have this really well-rounded way of helping people be intelligent about the plants, about the body, about the systems of the body, but also not afraid to use energetic systems, not afraid to take something from the kinds of energetics that ancient mystics were working with, whether that's the elements or whether that's, you know, some of the overlay with things like Ayurveda, Chinese medicine. You take what's useful on a symbolic and energetic plane and on a personal connection level with the plants, and you marry it to really smart scientific research. I think that that's rare. You don't see that a lot.
Well, thank you for saying that. Yeah, to me, it's all language. They're just different languages that we talk about the same thing. And I think the more diverse our languages as herbalists, the more we can reach more people. And that's kind of my goal. Like, I want everyone to like be able to identify plants, use plants. So we need to diversify the languages we speak, so we can talk with our physicians, so we can talk with a therapist, we can talk with a mystic, right? We can talk with children, and we have a language that everyone can use.
You talk in the program, in your modules, you have stuff on digestive and gut health. You have stuff on detoxification, colds and flus, and, you know, dealing with virus seasons. You talk about tissue states, and you're talking about how to give things to your kids for, you know, helping them maybe at times even relax before bed at night. We use a lot of different things with our kids. I love this, that you have called this I'm going to find the phrase where you use, that you use, and I'm going to mess it up, a community herbalist. What is a community herbalist, so that people can understand that definition? Because sometimes people might look at a course like this and think, gosh, unless I go to an accredited university for, you know, 8 years and learn all about chemistry, I have no right or business suggesting herbs to people or using herbs. That's just not true. And that's not the history of how folk herbal medicine has been used or taught. So what do you mean when you say community herbalist?
I think you said it perfectly. This is the people's medicine, and our grandmothers and great grandparents used plants as medicine. There's nothing actually that like hard about the practice of herbal medicine. It's just getting to know the plants and getting to know the times when they're most useful. I really envision that this course, people can take it and yes, use it for themselves, number one, because I think a lot changes when we have the personal experience, and then using it in your family, whether that's just, you know, maybe making a tea for your dog, or, you know, if you have kids, or maybe you just have a partner, maybe you have plants you can use, and we'll talk about taking care of a garden, but using it for yourself, for whoever's immediately around you, and then taking it beyond that, because it's likely that at some point, you're going to be talking with someone. They're going to say, oh, you know, I've got this digestion thing and I've tried this and this. And they might say, hey, you're studying herbs. Is there anything that you would recommend? And you know what? You'll probably have a few ideas. And that, you know, you never know how one way that you help someone out there in the world might trickle and then help others and more people. So I think through the self-knowledge and studying this knowledge in your own body, it'll naturally, it's like, you know, impossible for it not to spread out and start to affect the broader community.
Yeah, I think that's really important. This is also for that reason, because we have a vision. I mean, you guys know through my Kickstarter, you guys helped us build a community herbal medicine garden that Ashley's been hosting free and donation-based events out of, that the donations go back to right back into the garden and just growing the medicine that we then find ways of harvesting and giving to other people or letting other people come and harvest. We have a vision, we always have, back to the days when we had our yoga studio in Maryland. We have always had a vision of making this sacred knowledge accessible to people. And that is both there in this program in terms of the way you're framing what it means to be an herbalist. It might mean that you're a professional and you see clients, and you could continue beyond this program developing the skills to do that, this would certainly set you up for success. You could also go forward and be someone who uses what you know with friends and family and yourself. And that's an incredible set of tools to have. The program's also very accessible from both a programming standpoint and a price standpoint. I'll take you back over and show everybody. The programs, the modules are pre-recorded, but then you meet outside of the modules for discussion, community, Q&A, and sort of development and integration. So people can attend those live. If they miss those integration sessions, they can also watch the replays of those. So
absolutely, yeah.
Anyone could take this at their own rate, you know, as slowly or as quickly as you wanted to, really soak it in, or blaze through it. And, you know, and then we can certainly, beyond this program, as Ashley perhaps makes more advanced programs available as she's easing back in out of maternity leave, can help you with further development or recommend you to many other wonderful programs where you can continue your studies. We want this to be accessible. We want community herbalism to be, you know, as simple as being able to show a friend a couple of yoga stretches. We should be able to show each other herbs, you know, and just, hey, this is a helpful herb to use. Also, accessibility price-wise, we have an early bird enrollment and we have a standard enrollment. And then we have tuition level one assistance and tuition assistance level two, which break out the affordable tuition into different levels of affordability. And you can kind of identify where you're at if you're someone who wants to take this program but needs to work within your means and not hurt yourself doing it. And then for those who can pay, we ask that you use standard or early bird enrollment. And that's the same thing I do for all my astrology programs. So we try to keep it super, super accessible. The Herbal Apprenticeship Program starts April 24th. I know Ashley's super excited to be getting back into teaching too. I also would like to offer Ashley just a chance to tell everyone a little bit about, before we end here this interview, tell everyone maybe a little bit about your own background, who you studied with, what your influences are, and just anything else you want to say before we cap it off.
Ooh, okay. well, I think, you know, I started off as a kid playing in the woods, mixing perfumes and potions. And then I went on to study environmental science, where I studied organic chemistry and restoring native wetlands. And really from an environmental perspective, that's how I got into herbalism. And then after, you know, I realized after working on the restoration piece and joining a lot of earth advocacy groups that the problem's not with the earth, but with the people not understanding the value of the earth. So then I started going into holistic medicine. I graduated from University of North Carolina, Asheville with a degree in interdisciplinary studies. And I went on to get my, that was my undergrad. And then I got my master's from the Maryland University of Integrative Health. It was then called Thai Sophia. But my teachers there, you know, I had such a great blend of teachers, really scientific minds, like Simon Mills from the UK and Kevin Spellman, who is like a chemistry genius, who's also an Ayurvedic practitioner, studied with Dr. Vasant Lad. Matthew Prisco, medicine maker from Galen's Way out in California. So I had a really wonderful, diverse variety of teachers in that 3-year full-time master's level program. And then after that, I went on to study with Matthew Wood pretty intensively because I liked his energetics. I liked the way he spoke about the plants and his personal experience working with low dose, drop dose medicine. And he has had amazing, he's done such amazing work herbally with just using that method. And I've got a lot of herbalists in my basket.
David Duke comes to mind.
Jim Duke, Margie Flint, Rosemary Gladstar is like, I've only done one herb walk with her, but it was amazing. So, you know, I have shelves of herbal books and people who I just adore. Yeah. And yeah, I just feel really grateful that I've had that blend of the science and the energetic herbalism and the traditional herbalist perspective as well. And I try my best to blend them together and to give everyone a really diverse yet integrated herbal studying experience.
Yeah, absolutely. You get that. That is exactly what you'll get if you sign up for Ashley's program, which I encourage you to do if this is the kind of thing that interests you. You won't regret it. It's a fantastic course with someone I absolutely love, obviously, but also like a really, truly fantastic human being and teacher of plant medicine. And if you want to learn more about her, see her work, get to know her a little bit, check out her YouTube channel, Sky House Herbs, where she publishes weekly on plant medicine, plant energetics, and also on Instagram, which is Sky House Herbs. So the apprenticeship program starts April 24th. I wanted to get Ashley on, brag about her program, turn you guys on to it. Thank you so much for being here. And I'm sure that we're going to see some people from the Nightlight astrology world getting introduced to you and all of your magic.
I would love that. Thank you.
All right. Take it easy, everyone. Bye.